"How awful!" Fernanda lamented. "This child is as much of a barbarian as her father." It was necessary to borrow beds and hammocks from the neighbors, to set up 9 shifts at the table, to fix hours for bathing, and to borrow 40 stools so that the girls in blue uniforms with masculine buttons would not spend the whole day running from one place to another. The visit was a failure because the noisy schoolgirls would scarcely finish breakfast before they had to start taking turns for lunch and then for dinner, and for the whole week they were able to take only 1 walk through the plantations. At nightfall, the nuns were exhausted, unable to move, give another order, and still the troop of tireless adolescents was in the courtyard singing school songs out of tune. One day they were on the point of trampling Ursula, who made an effort to be useful precisely where she was most in the way. On another day, the nuns got all excited because Colonel Aureliano Buendia had urinated under the chestnut tree without being concerned that the schoolgirls were in the courtyard. Amaranta was on the point of causing panic because one of the nuns went into the kitchen as she was salting the soup, and the only thing that occurred to her to say was to ask what those handfuls of white powder were. "Arsenic," Amaranta answered. The night of their arrival, the students carried on in such a way, trying to go to the bathroom before they went to bed, that at 1 o'clock in the morning the last ones were still going in. Fernanda then bought 72 chamber pots, but she only managed to change the nocturnal problem into a morning one, because from dawn on there was a long line of girls, each with her pot in her hand, waiting for her turn to wash it. Although some of them suffered fevers and several of them were infected by mosquito bites, most of them showed an unbreakable resistance as they faced the most troublesome difficulties, and even at the time of the greatest heat, they would scamper through the garden. When they finally left, the flowers were destroyed, the furniture broken, and the walls covered with drawings and writing. But Fernanda pardoned them for all of the damage because of her relief at their leaving. She returned the borrowed beds and stools and kept the 72 chamber pots in Melquiades's room. The locked room, about which the spiritual life of the house revolved in former times, was known from that time on as the chamber pot room. For Colonel Aureliano Buendia, it was the most appropriate name, because while the rest of the family was still amazed by the fact that Melquiades's room was immune to dust and destruction, he saw it turned into a dunghill. In any case, it did not seem to bother him who was correct, and if he found out about the fate of the room, it was because Fernanda kept passing by and disturbing his work for a whole afternoon as she put away the chamber pots. During those days, José Arcadio II reappeared in the house. He went along the porch without greeting anyone, and he shut himself up in the workshop to talk to the colonel. In spite of the fact that she could not see him, Ursula analyzed the clicking of his foreman's boots and was surprised at the unbridgeable distance that separated him from the family, even from the twin brother with whom he had played ingenious games of confusion in childhood and with whom he no longer had any traits in common. He was linear, solemn, and had a pensive air and the sadness of a Saracen, and a mournful glow on his face that was the color of autumn. He was the one who most resembled his mother, Santa Sofia de la Piedad. Ursula reproached herself for the habit of forgetting about him when she spoke about the family, but when she sensed him in the house again and noticed that the colonel let him into the workshop during working hours, she re-examined her old memories and confirmed the belief that at some moment in childhood he had changed places with his twin brother, because it was he, and not the other one, who should have been called Aureliano. No one knew the details of his life. At one time it was discovered that he had no fixed abode, that he raised fighting cocks at Pilar Ternera's house, and that sometimes he would stay there to sleep, but that he almost always spent the night in the rooms of the French matrons. He drifted about, with no ties of affection, with no ambitions, like a wandering star in Ursula's planetary system. In reality, José Arcadio II was not a member of the family, nor would he ever be of any other since that distant dawn when Colonel Gerineldo Márquez took him to the barracks, not so that he could see an execution, but so that, for the rest of his life, he would never forget the sad and somewhat mocking smile of the man being shot.